All right, hello and welcome to the Southbound Sports Show. I'm your host, Richie Leahy, here with Maddie B. and Rick David. I live in North Carolina, so I'm in the middle of hurricane season. So if we go out, it's because, I'll just be honest, air's storming like crazy here. So power might go out, but we'll try to get back on and see how it goes. And today's episode should be pretty cool because football season has finally started. No more of that preseason crap. But we'll go ahead, go high tempo. First things first. My topic for this week, the plagiarism scandal at Florida State. It's not getting a lot of press. Matt, I told you I was going to bring it up on the show. I had to. Don't think I forgot just because Francois broke his leg or whatever happened to him. But three players from, I think it was three. It might have even been more because I think two of them were involved in a group project. Two or three players from Florida State's national championship team in 2013 did presentations for classes where they blatantly plagiarized the material. And I think New York Times, what was that article from I sent you guys? Washington Post. I think it was a New York magazine, did an expose on it and linked up their, and it just didn't make sense to me. They linked up their presentation because it was a public presentation for a class. Like, these guys didn't know that their PowerPoint that they give in front of people is going to be scrutinized because that was word for word copy. And one was from Wikipedia, which is embarrassing. But that's my topic for the week. Go ahead, do your research on that and see what you think. Draw your own conclusions. Do you think they just copied that material and that, should they have got credit for that? I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. Go ahead, Matt. What's your topic for this week?
I was looking at the because of hurricane season, they're talking about this Sunday's Tampa Bay Miami game getting moved and getting rescheduled from this Sunday to week 11, which would be November 19th. That absolutely screws both of those teams because instead of having a bye week later in the season, they now have to go 16 games straight with no break in between. There's neutral site games that they could play that, like Atlanta, where they could be protected from the storm weather, that they could use that as a potential fundraiser. I thought that it was ridiculous that they went ahead and they're already speculating that they're just going to cancel that week's because of not being able to play it in Miami. I think there's other neutral site games where it wouldn't cost season ticket holders, it wouldn't cost the fans anything, and it would provide those players with the break that they should be getting.
Yeah, I agree on that. And it's interesting that they start to cancel things all over. Before we started the show, Rick and I were talking about the Miami Hurricanes game. They're in a similar situation against Arkansas State. And to me, why even play that game? It's not a marquee opponent. If you're going to go ahead and push it back to like week 11 or whatever, that should work for both teams. They shouldn't be able to say no. They should just lose the game. Why should the NCAA risk players because these two teams don't want to play late in the season, but they're going to have to throw something together and play in the middle of a storm? Just cancel the game and have them lose that data point. You'll see how fast Miami turns around. Because they don't want to be risk getting out of the playoffs because they only have 11, 12 wins instead of the 13 that everyone else has. Rick, what's your topic for this week?
Mine is building upon a topic that happened a couple, our last episode was Ezekiel Elliott is going to play on week one. So he will be playing week one. Week two is now in question. The arbitrator didn't make the decision by 4 o'clock today. So he is going to play. So fantasy owners of Ezekiel Elliott put him in. He'll be facing the Giants defense, which isn't that good. So I think that will be a good day for him. So, and a good day for all those Cowboy fans, too. So I think that's going to be huge fantasy-wise and stat-wise and Cowboys-wise there.
Did you guys see that report that he put out for the NFL Players Association where he said that he did drugs at Ohio State?
No, I didn't. No,
when did he post that?
Well, it was the actual, like, the NFL had to have him do, like, his official statement under oath or whatever, which it's not a court of law, so who knows. But he said that he liked to party, and the girl that alleged the abuse and him would do drugs together and party real hard together. And that's where the abuse allegations came from, because I guess it was I don't want to speculate, but I don't know. It was a weird relationship. But if you want to go ahead and do some light reading, look that up and see, because it's kind of like, I think it was in question and answer format. I just skimmed it today a little bit. But he admitted that while he was at Ohio State, he would party pretty hard. So just some further background information. He said he hasn't done it since college. Maybe that's why he's had such a great performance his rookie year compared to some other guys. If he was on drugs or whatever in college, maybe that affected his performance downward, and that's why it looked like he was much better in the NFL. But that's just speculation, because you never know how much someone parties or whatever. But he did say it under oath, so he obviously wanted that to come out. Now, go ahead, and today is going to be more of a relaxed episode because we finally have football. Some big games this past weekend. I watched a ton of football. Start off hitting on my Michigan Wolverines. Pretty good showing. Quarterback play. Ugh. Man, that scares me. But overall, defense looked fast. Our guys looked way faster than Florida. Which, I mean, I think I've tweeted out from the Southbound Sports official account. If you go on, you can look up. They now have the actual team roster talent component. 24/7 puts it together where they go through every roster, and instead of just doing like a year worth of recruits, it's opening day rosters, and then they give every team a rating. Well, Michigan had the 7th best roster in college football, and Florida was down somewhere in the lower teens, maybe even in the 20s. So there is a talent gap. McElwain's not recruiting well. I don't know how much longer he lasts at Florida. I think he was supposed to be an offensive guru. He came in, and that offense was awful. 11 rushing yards. There was no time during the game where I was actually threatened. I actually texted Matt and Jeff during the game and was like, hey, calm down. Harbaugh's going to make the adjustments because Florida's not doing anything. And I think the line I texted was, their defense can't score all their points, can they? And they almost did. 14 of the 17 points they had were on the defense. So Michigan almost pitched a shutout and spotted them 14 points. And I don't know how. Florida fans cannot be happy. Their offensive coordinator, Nussmeier, coached at Michigan under the Brady Hoke years when I had student tickets. And I would just say, I don't know how that man has a job. I think he got ran out of Alabama, came to Michigan. We ran him out of town. And he's just living happily in Florida. Five yard outs. A couple deep throws, which, I mean, Michigan has, we have an inexperienced secondary. Their first game, most of those guys starting. Florida takes maybe 2 deep shots. I think they completed both of them. And then one later in the game, they came back to it. Only a handful when it was working. It didn't make any sense to me. Like, why not test these guys instead of just having the impressively fast linebackers we had in the game run down Florida's running backs for no yards? But that's kind of just a quick overview of that game. I mean, I don't know what else to say. I don't know if you can judge Michigan based off Florida because their talent's so low this year. There's another composite put out. It's the blue chip ratio. I think Florida's only 30-something percent. Normally, they're around 50% of their roster is made up of blue chip recruits. They don't have it this year. And that's been going down every year since Urban left. So Florida, I don't see, if they win the SEC East again, that might be the biggest joke of a division in college football. Because what division's worse than that? If you have guys that can't even score, can't even run the ball against, I mean, yeah, Michigan theoretically now is a top 10 team, but at that time they weren't. So I don't know. The SEC East looked pretty weak overall. Let's do that. We'll kick off with that. What do you guys think was the best performance of a conference? Go ahead, Matt. Do you have your thoughts over the weekend?
Well, before we start looking at the overall conferences, I had texted you throughout the Florida game, Michigan game, and said, I don't understand why you're stressing out over Florida. There's this perception that Florida is a good football team, and they're a dumpster fire. They haven't been good since Urban and Tebow were there. They've been on a progressive slide since those guys have been gone. And it's almost like when you hear Florida, you think of when they were a good football team. Because they're playing in arguably, and it's been, you know, you name the major sports outlet, they've talked about how terrible that side of the conference is. That you can stumble, fumble, and fall and end up like Florida playing for the conference championship. And they got slaughtered by Alabama last year when they went to that game. I think they were 3 or 4 touchdown underdogs going in and didn't even cover the spread in that game. I mean, at least be competitive coming out of the gate.
Well, I think
if you're looking...
I did some research beforehand, and I sent some of it to you, but every time they played a team that has comparable or better talent, that ends up being Alabama every year, Florida State every year, and Michigan 2 of the last 3 years since McElwain's been there, they pretty much lose by double digits every time. I think the Michigan Bowl game was a 30-point game. This was double digits, could have been more. That could have ended up being like a 41-3 game if the offense didn't have those two pick sixes. And Florida State last year, similar score to what the Michigan game ended up on Saturday. I think it was 30-something to about 14-17 again. So every time they're up against comparable schools that they used to have competitive games with, they're not even coming close. Double-digit losses every time. And that's why I don't know if Mac is a good coach. Go ahead, Matt. I cut you off, but...
Looking at overall conferences, and one of the sleeper ones right now that stands out to me is the Pac-10 or Pac-12 or whatever the Pac is now. But those teams put up some points. Now, granted, the talent level wasn't there. Stanford hung 62 on Rice. You had Washington State won their game by a sizable margin. Oregon won their game by a sizable, like UCLA had the comeback victory versus Texas A&M. You know, for as hard as I think people are on them for not winning their conference, you know, like they always seem to fizzle out towards the end of the year. They had a really strong opening weekend. Well, I mean, Washington, even though it was just Rutgers, they still ended up winning 30-14. I mean, they came out pretty clean with that first week. Now, will they shoot themselves in the foot as the year progresses? More than likely, yeah. And they'll probably end up losing out on one of the 4 playoff spots because of it. But when you're hanging again against teams that you're supposed to beat, Washington State beats Montana State 31-0, and Oregon pounds Southern Utah 77-21. If you're gonna schedule a podung team, that's what you have to do in these early games. You got to just blow them completely out of the water. If you let them hang in there and squeak by with a victory, it doesn't do anything for your strength of schedule. It doesn't do anything for your conference prestige. You got to win. You got to win big.
Rick, what are your thoughts on opening weekend?
And that's why I'll agree with Matt is. This is why I don't like teams like Florida State playing Alabama all of a sudden, because Florida State's in, got their quarterback injured, plus they already have the one loss. So I would rather say play the teams that are either your 1AA's or your small school Division I's and just blow them out, similar to what most of the Big Ten did. Everybody in the Big Ten, except for, you know, Michigan played Florida, a lot of the Big Ten guys played the MAC schools or, you know, smaller schools and blew them all out of the water. So, I mean, I would rather play them. The one thing I kept hearing on ESPN, and it's besides that, the Nissan commercial with all the freaking Heisman Trophy winners was, there's no preseason in college football. No preseason. I think I heard that about 78 times on Saturday. Okay, so what do? You make your own preseason, you schedule a weaker team than you, you do like Penn State did, and you schedule a MAC team and blow them out of the water. Make sure you got everything right. Your guys are pulled out in the third quarter, fourth quarter, most of your starters. Give them some breaks and let them do that. And I'll agree with Richie, even though I don't want to. Michigan looked like they were on like turbo speed out there on Madden, because Florida couldn't keep up with them. And the fourth quarter was the most obvious thing. It was like, it looked like Florida was trying, but they had no shot. Like, Michigan's still running, and those guys looked like tired as heck. So, I mean, kudos to Michigan. They went out and played to Florida and beat them. So, but, I mean, I would still say the Big Ten, everybody won, except for Rutgers, Indiana, and Purdue, which are probably going to be your three of, maybe three of your bottom teams in that Big Ten.
Well, you can't count Indiana in that because they played Ohio State, which was odd that the Big Ten had a conference game before October, because normally they don't do that unless it's a long September like it is this year. I was leaning Big Ten because when I did my original notes, UCLA was getting their asses kicked by Texas A&M, and I was like, I'll focus on this Virginia Tech game. And I turned back because I have two TVs, so I have both games up. I turned back to see a fake spike, and I'm like, what happened in the past 15 minutes? I didn't even believe it. I text a friend. He's like, I thought you were making that up. I had to go on and check the score because that game was unbelievable, making the pack look better than I think what you can't always go by record, because I watched a USC game and USC did not look good. I honestly think Stanford has a chance to rule them. I know Stanford didn't really play anyone, but Stanford looked like a well-oiled machine when I watched them play. USC, they were getting dusted by Western Michigan's receivers. And there's no way Western Michigan has the top talent or the top speed that they're going to see in conference. Even a team like Notre Dame, that's kind of a wild card right now. If you can't keep up with Western Michigan's receivers, how are you going to stop some of these other guys that have guys with 4.4 speed? It was kind of like USC's problems from last year in the bowl game when Penn State was doing whatever they wanted on offense. At some point, I know out west they don't play defense, but at some point you have to have a defense, or a team like Stanford could just roll you. Because if your defense is getting tired in the third quarter against Western Michigan, how do you think it's going to feel whenever Stanford just power running you five to 10 plays a series every time? They're just running the first two times and throwing the ball. I just don't see. And the scary thing for me, I thought Washington was going to be good this year. They couldn't block Rutgers. And I'll say that again. They couldn't block Rutgers. How bad is it that every play Rutgers had a guy in the backfield? Washington was able to win. If you didn't watch the game, they had to have a punt return to give them that extra cushion for a touchdown. If they don't have that special teams touchdown, Rutgers is right in that game till the very end. And this is a team that Michigan beat 78-0 last year. 78-0, and Washington can't block them. And it was the same guy. I think he was like a junior or senior. I knew they had a good defensive end, but one defensive end was in the backfield every play. That's scary news for Washington. I'm not so high on them. The Big Ten did look good. I had them in my positives. Purdue was very close to upsetting Louisville, which would have sent shockwaves through the ACC after their weekend, especially after Tennessee came back and beat Georgia Tech, which no way should have happened. All Georgia Tech had to do was keep running the ball. Run the clock out. What are you doing? It doesn't make any sense. Like, that was like, if I was a Georgia Tech fan, I would be so upset today. Like, I was watching the game just thinking, like, man, if I were a Georgia Tech fan, it was kind of like the Falcons in the Super Bowl, and both teams from Atlanta, you're watching it, and it's like, Tennessee's going to win this game. They had that stupid bucket. This guy's carrying a bucket. For every turnover, they get the turnover, their player runs over, and he's supposed to dunk it in the bucket, and the guy holding the bucket, like, turns it. And they looked like fools out there, and Georgia Tech still let them win. I couldn't get over it. They went for two when they didn't have to, and I don't think they should have. Like Herb Street said during the game, if anyone watched the game, Herb Street said, Tennessee needs to go for two because they can't stop Georgia Tech's offense. Why would Georgia Tech shoot themselves in the foot? Tennessee's defense was so tired, they easily scored a touchdown, and they went for two anyway. Just kick the field goal. You get the ball back. You know you're going to score. Tennessee couldn't stop you the whole game. I don't know why you stopped running. It just, games like that, and luckily Virginia Tech won for the ACC. I did have them on my negatives until Louisville pulled it out. You can't fault Florida State. Rick, I know you want to say that, but the whole reason the Big Ten, people forget last year how the Big Ten got four teams in the top 10. It was due to the non-conference. Michigan beat Colorado, who ended up with 10 wins. Wisconsin beat LSU. And then Ohio State destroyed Oklahoma, which I honestly think is going to happen again this weekend. And so this year you're having the same thing shape up. Michigan beats Florida handily. Looked way better. If Ohio State crushes Oklahoma again, it pretty much locks up a playoff spot for the Big Ten. There's no way around it. That conference is going to get one team in, at least one team, and you can't beat a contender from two of the other biggest leagues. Oklahoma, some are saying, are a shoe-in. If Ohio State runs them out of the building again, and it's at Ohio State this year, that's why I think it's going to happen. So, I don't know.
I don't. Go ahead, Matt. I think it's a little premature for that. It's very likely that it locks a spot in for the Big Ten. I don't necessarily think that it's an automatic. I think when you look, and we were talking a week or two ago about that West Virginia team back in 2007, that there was the year that everyone randomly started losing games for no reason. I think depending on when teams lose games and how they're losing them, if you have a team like Oregon that runs the table, or even a Washington State that runs the table and wins their conference, they could end up being a lock. And then you have, more than likely, I think Alabama should run the table the rest of the way, because I don't foresee them losing again. So there's another spot. I think between if Florida State or Clemson runs the table, they may end up taking a spot just because of the non-conference games that they scheduled. I think that it could push where if the Big Ten starts to beat each other up and you see a two or even a possible three loss team, even though it's against a top ranked opponent, if you're playing some of those games later in the year because they're conference games, they could come back to bite you versus some of these other programs, to take. And I'll just say, what if an Oklahoma that loses to Ohio State but wins out the rest of their slate wins the rest of the conference? You could put them, they can have a case as a one-loss team to make the playoff. It would go back to that whole, do you accept a two-loss team over a team that's a conference champion and one loss?
Well, when I'm looking at that this year, the reason why it's quick to write off Oklahoma, I'm pretty sure that the Big 12 has a championship game this year. So you really, the Big 12 right now is two teams after the losses they suffered this opening weekend. Maryland beat Texas. I forgot that one. What if Texas rolls off 8-7 wins? That's only going to make the Big Ten look better that a team that's going to be finishing fourth or lower beat Texas at home by double digits. Now you have Oklahoma.
But nonetheless.
Go ahead.
But nonetheless, it goes back to that argument of, do you value a conference champion or do you value the strength of schedule? And if they're starting to put more weight to it, the Big 12 took a step in the right direction by setting that conference champion. And if it is the top two teams, then I think you eliminate some of what the SEC is facing, where you went out on the one side and then you get to play a cupcake for your conference. There's no weight, even though you're the conference champion, there's no weight to that game playing it that way.
Well, I'll say this. I see where you're coming from, but I'm on the premise that the Big Ten, they have four teams in the top 10. One of those teams is going to win the Big Ten. Because I sent you guys the schedules. I'll start with Wisconsin. Wisconsin has the absolute weakest schedule. They're already in the top 10. They play one ranked team all year, and that's Michigan. So if they win all the games they're favored in and lose one, that's only one loss. They're going to be in the Big Ten championship game. Penn State is just as weak. They play Michigan and Ohio State back-to-back. They do have a bye before Michigan, and Michigan's at home. Let's say Penn State beats Michigan this year, loses to Ohio State. They're in the championship against a one-loss Wisconsin. Those two teams, the winner of that game is going to be in the playoffs no matter what. They're not going to leave the Big Ten out or try to do some tomfoolery like they did last year, picking and choosing who they think. They made the mistake leaving out the conference champion, and they regretted it. So, yeah, you're right in that aspect. But even looking at Ohio State, let's say Ohio State and Penn State are the top two in the East right now. If Ohio State beats Oklahoma, they're left with two ranked teams left. That's Penn State and Michigan. They get Penn State at home. They could easily split. You could be in the same scenario in the East where you have three teams with one loss that all lost to each other. And then Wisconsin on the other side. I'm not going to rush out and say the Big Ten's going to get two. But I'm going to say, even if all those teams have one loss, they're pretty much going to be locked in just because they can say, you're going to put in an Oklahoma that's marquee wins against Oklahoma State twice. because that's what's going to hurt the Big 12. Unlike these other conferences, like you said, Clemson or Florida State, they could run the table, but they could also get a cupcake in the other division. I mean, you've seen it happen in the past where they get just one more win, bump it up, where they don't have that stress of playing a rematch Bedlam, because that's what it's looking at. I know it's super early, but like Oklahoma plays Oklahoma State and then they might have to play them again 2 or 3 weeks later. I'm not sure how they changed the schedule this year, because if Bedlam, I don't think it's over. Is it over Thanksgiving weekend? I mean, you're going to have...
It's around that time, yeah.
Yeah, so you're going to be playing... Half. If that's who... Right now, those are the two top 10 Big 12 teams. If they play each other 2 weeks in a row, they could easily knock each other out. Especially if Oklahoma loses the first one and then wins the second one, already losing to Ohio State, and then they're looking at it and they're saying, ah, but Ohio State ran these guys off the field again. So, I don't know. I'm just looking at that, and there's a bunch of other question marks. Like, what if Stanford does beat USC this weekend, and then they rematch in the Pac-12 championship and lose? That could theoretically be Stanford's only loss, and they split. We haven't seen a scenario like that, where they one team lost in the regular season, won the championship. Who do they put in? And right now, it's looking realistic. Like, that could happen out there. Do you guys have any other further thoughts on the conference performance the first week? I know I mentioned that Georgia Tech. What did you think of that, Matt?
It was just so bizarre. It just like I think you hit the nail on the head with the game was won. Like Georgia Tech had it, and then just for no reason. Well, I think the funniest quote was from Paul Johnson. They asked him about why he didn't try to challenge the pitch, because I guess the pitch was forward instead of like a lateral, and he said, "We didn't run the play right. We didn't deserve to win, and I just decided not to challenge." He's like, "We just didn't like the play was run completely wrong," and he was just pissed and was just like, "No, we didn't deserve that win." So I got to give him a little bit of credit for at least like just being outright, just that we screwed it up.
Hey, they want to know if you're Logan Mankins there, Bilchak.
Don't be jealous.
Rick, what do you think? Did you watch that game last night?
No, I did not. And I will say this. I'm going to give credit to Maryland. They had the upset of the week. They exposed Texas, and Texas is not going to be that good. They made them look bad on a lot of deep passing plays, and I think that's going to be a team that may surprise some people is Maryland, how well they did. So I give the kudos to Maryland, and I agree with you on your Big Ten statements. Wisconsin could go undefeated if they beat Michigan. I think that's going to be their only question here. So.
And they get Michigan at home the week
before. The home game.
Yeah, before we play Ohio State. So what if we're looking ahead? That's how they lost the Iowa game. Was it last year? An away game late in the season, had some guys banged up. I mean, anything could happen, but you're looking at the West, I think
it's funny that you say that.
Go ahead.
Because that's exactly the team that I was looking at. That Iowa plays. I think they play Penn State late. They play.
Yeah, they play Penn State in about 2 or 3 weeks, and that's
the
game.
They play Penn State.
I have circled
3 weeks.
But the thing is, but even with Penn State, even though they're playing Pitt next week, it's not a gimme. They should win. Penn State, by and large, should win that game. But like, if there's a game that Narduzzi knows he has to win, if he could lose every other game this year, he has to win this one. And I think just from a recruiting standpoint, he has to win so he can try to keep some of those Pitt recruits at home.
Well, that's what I was talking off record with Rick. I'm so glad I didn't realize that they switched the Maryland game to Penn State's last game of the season, their rivalry. That's another team that's going to do anything possible to beat Penn State. I was actually at the Penn State game where they lost to Maryland 2 years ago on a field goal. All those Maryland fans, obnoxious, annoying. I can just use any term to describe them. They were there and they were pumped. And you know their coach, same with Pitt. They're going to do anything to win. Fourth down, go for it. Crazy trick plays, going for it. They're not going to be like Paul Johnson for Georgia Tech, just hanging out, going for like, our team's running right now and they can't stop us, but we'll just give it a shot and give them a chance. 50-50. You know, Pitt has looked awful. I know I forgot to mention that, but that was another game, like the UCLA game. I had it up. I'm like, Pitt's going to roll here. I turn back, and they're heading to overtime. And I respect Bo Pelini. I'm surprised that he's not getting another job when you have all these other wackos getting hired at random positions. And Nebraska, man, they got rid of him for Mike Riley. And then Nebraska almost lost, or it was close to going into overtime against Arkansas State, and they play Oregon. That's my game where I think Oregon is going to put a hurting on Nebraska, and you're going to see why I only think Wisconsin and maybe Iowa, but I just think Iowa has the tougher games. I think they play both Ohio State and Penn State, if I'm not wrong. And Wisconsin only plays Michigan. So that's where I think Iowa might pull an upset or two, but they have the tougher schedule. So I think ultimately, even if Wisconsin slips up, I think they're in the better position to advance to that Western Championship, because I don't think Nebraska, with their coach, is ever going to make it. And that was, like, I think, the worst hire. You hire a guy that had a losing record at Oregon State to be your coach. You can't be excited about that as a fan. We'll go ahead and switch to the NFL because I want to spend some time on this. Do you guys have any closing thoughts on college football? Anything to watch? I know my big game this week is Clemson and Auburn. Clemson needs to win this bad for the ACC, or things could be in dire straits. I think if Clemson loses, then yeah, you really need Florida State or Clemson to win out and win the rest of the games with one loss, because you can't have your top teams losing to pretty much their non-conference matchups. Matt, go ahead. You can kick off. Any final thoughts on college football?
Well, number one, I'll be surprised if Clemson beats Auburn. Auburn got the transfer quarterback from Baylor. He looked pretty good in the spring game. With trying to replace Watson, I just don't know if Clemson has it in the tank. I know defensively they have some pretty good guys in place, but I don't know if they have enough to put it together to compete with Auburn. The other thing with the Florida State game that really took me by surprise was the number of injuries. I mean, you dealt with Francois, who had the patella tear, but then both of Alabama's outside linebackers out for the year. One of their middle linebacker had a groin injury. I'm trying to think here. And one of their other outside linebackers had a sprained ankle. So Alabama's out four starters that could possibly spell trouble for them down the line, especially when they have to face LSU and Auburn late in the year. You could see them possibly lose a game just because of the number and nature of the injuries. Watching that Florida State game, let me add on here,
because I texted you during the Michigan game. I don't think the field was ready for either of those two games. We talked about the stadium being rushed to complete that game. Michigan and Florida, guys were falling all over the place. Like bad. There was one of the fumbles, I think, was caused by Florida's quarterback kind of just falling because he didn't have a grip. And I text Matt and I said, the field's not ready. Someone's going to get hurt out here. And then you saw the same thing in the Florida State. When you're having a bunch of it, I don't want to say the field was slippy in that game, but it looked like it wasn't as springy. Like, if you watch the Francois injury in slow motion, like, his leg kind of stuck in the turf. So I wonder if it's a case of just not having the field ready. It hasn't been played on. You're rolling it out. And now you have, like you said, a bunch of injuries on top teams. That's not good for anyone. It's not good for the fan. We don't want to see that. I don't want to be cringing because I see Florida's quarterback sliding for no reason. I'm like, oh, I don't want to see him get hurt. I want a hard fought matchup. Same thing with Florida State. It just seemed like something to me. And I don't know if you guys saw it, but it just looked like he kind of stuck. And I think you could see that on the field the whole time. Like, people, they weren't exploding. You didn't see that top speed. And I think that's because I don't think the field actually set yet. And that's just something I noticed. But you can go ahead and kick back in. But I just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah, I kind of thought the same thing. I was overall, I would have liked to have seen the win. But like we had talked off air before, if there was a game to lose, that was the one to do it in. Because by playing a tough team. The only thing that it did is it strengthens your non-conference. It strengthens your overall schedule. So if the rest of the conference is in bad shape, if you win the rest of your games, it puts you in a really good position to justify the panel putting you into the playoff. This gives more than enough time for them to get Blackman ready for UL Monroe. That way they can kind of make sure that, you know, they have some live film of him taking snaps and doing things before they step up for that Miami game, which is going to be a huge, huge one for him in 2 weeks. So they got to be ready for that. And definitely getting the gear switched up with a new quarterback is going to be tough. But if there's any coach that I would trust doing it, it's the quarterback guru, Jimbo Fisher.
Rick, any thoughts? College football.
Two final thoughts. One, Nick Saban, 11-0 versus assistants. ESPN, thank you for that nonstop reminding me of that. So I want to say that. Second point is also Pitt-Penn State's probably going to be the game I'm going to be most interested in. Pitt was a team that kept, or Penn State fans think, that kept them out of the Final Four to make the playoff. So I will say this. They have to go to Penn State, play in front of over 100,000 fans, who are probably going to do a whiteout again as usual. They're going to have to do it. So I think that's going to be the game. I think Penn State has a lot to prove. James Franklin, that was a game that came to question, and people were starting to say, is James Franklin going to stick around? And then it was after that, that's when he turned it on, and they started a winning streak. So I'm saying Penn State, and Penn State has a lot to prove. And this, they beat them, and they can knock off Michigan and Ohio State. Maybe they get the perfect season or the one loss season to get into the Final Four.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. There, I think Iowa and Iowa State play too. So there are a couple early game rivalry games this week too to keep an eye out on. And follow that up with Clemson-Auburn and Stanford-USC. I think we have a good weekend going up. One last comment. I think the state of Virginia did very well last week. James Madison upsets ECU. James Madison's a lower. They play in the playoff. College football, whatever that's called, FCS, I think. And Virginia Tech beats West Virginia. And who was the other team I was thinking of? Oh, Liberty beat Baylor. Liberty, I think their first ever Power 5 win, goes into Baylor and embarrasses them. And Liberty, if you're not familiar with that school started as like an online Christian school. They collected a ton of endowment just because of alums getting successful at their jobs and donating back. So much that they had such an excess of money that they decided that they wanted to start playing sports at a higher level, paid for their own guys to jump up, and they're going to be going full-time Division I football bowl series, whatever the stupid name they call it, I think not even for another year or two. So they're not even full-time. They just get called up and beat Baylor. I know they're having scandal based on players allegedly sexually abusing women, so couldn't happen to a better school. So we'll end on that. And switch into NFL. Very first thing, because I don't want to forget this, since we're Pittsburgh-based, as I try to move our icon here, Steelers have announced that they are starting T.J. Watt over James Harrison. Thoughts? Rick, we'll kick it off with you this time.
Younger and quicker in speed, and he's going to be your new future outside linebacker here for a stay. James Harrison's still going to be in there, and he's still going to be on pass rushing downs, but Watt will be in there most of the time. So am I surprised by this? No. Do I think this is James Harrison's last year? Probably yes. I think it's one of those things that, you know, was eventually going to happen. So it happens in week one. And I will say this, Watt had a good preseason. So he kind of earned it. It looked like he was all over the field. He was definitely one defensive guy that you actually saw making a positive impact instead of the defensive backs that were getting burned every pass play, Ross Cockrell, thanks for your career in Pittsburgh. So, but I think he deserves it. So he's earned it. So kind of like a mini version of his brother. So good luck to him.
Matt, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I definitely think it's the right move to make. If there's ever a time to replace a 47-year-old NFL vet, it's with your rookie first-round draft pick. You're better off giving him a shot because at some point you just can't keep wheeling him out there. He's been serviceable the last couple of years, but why continue to just push the pace? Like, he's not going to play forever. He doesn't have. He may have at most 2 to 3 years. So let's not run ourselves into this the same situation we're talking about right now with Roethlisberger. Why sit there and wait until he's already retired and then go, oh, well, who are we going to have starting? It's smart that they're getting someone in position right now to handle that transition. And if TJ Watt gets hurt, if he struggles, if there's some kind of issue, what better person to lean on than the veteran that doesn't need the in-game reps? Harrison can come off the bench in a spot relief and still make productive plays.
I'll say this. My initial thought was it's not so much of him losing a starting position as much as it is them just resting him and extending his career. At this point, why does he care if he's named starter? Let the young guy in. Let him take the abuse when the guys are fresh on the offensive line. Let him fight through tackles, blocking downfield or pulling guards early in the game when they're fresh. Then bring Harrison in late, like you said, passing downs. Have him come in and rush the quarterback. I think this is just a ploy by the Steelers to boost up Watt. I mean, he's already high in Steeler jersey sales, not as high as James Conner, but he's getting up there because of some of the preseason hype. I haven't seen it get for him against like the top first line on other teams' defenses, so it'll be interesting to see. I know he's playing. I think we lost Matt, but I think he's playing at a high level that they can give him a shot and see what happens. And there's no downside. No downside to him playing over whoever's next in line at this point. So Steelers week one, get the Browns. We'll start with them. Rick, what do you think is going to happen? Do you think the Steelers have a chance to lose the game this week?
I think this is the Steelers' victory. I think this is a good way for them to start their season playing the Browns. They've had lots of success over the past years against the Browns. This is a team that hasn't given the Steelers much problems in years and years and years. So I would say this is a good starting spot for them. And I think one spot where they can continue, get players ready. Bell will be dressed, obviously, for this game. So break him into this. And plus, you're going to have play Connor in this game, too. So, I mean, you're going to have a rested team here ready to go. So I don't see the Browns having a shot. Do I think they'll do better this year than years past? Yes. But I still think Steelers victory easily by double digits.
Yeah, I think Steelers are going to win the game. It's interesting to see that they go ahead and do this rivalry type matchup early. Normally, they kind of space these out throughout the season. So I'm not really sure if they're doing that for a certain reason or not. But good to see that. The other game, well, Matt, looks like you're back. What are your thoughts on the Steelers-Browns week one?
I think it's a good matchup in the early part of the season just to see how they're going to split carries between Le'Veon Bell and James Conner. I think also with seeing Joe Hayden in the black and gold, I thought it was one of those, thank God they finally made the right move with their secondary and finally address some of those needs that they had. I was actually surprised they didn't get more of a push to try to sign TJ Ward. Or was it TJ Ward?
TJ Ward.
Tampa Bay signed.
I think I sent some tweets about that after they signed Hayden. I said, I hope the Steelers go ahead and sign him. And of course they didn't.
Because, you know, uncharacteristic of them is to make moves, you know, as the season ever, you know, let alone once the season's almost starting. I was really happy they signed Hayden because I think he's a guy that for a change isn't in his mid-30s when they sign him. He actually is, 27, 28 years old. So they actually have a little bit of tread left on him before he starts hitting those late years. I thought, could they have gone after him? Could they have gone after someone like Ward? Yeah, but because they passed on him, I think that they're still pretty solid in the secondary now with Burns on one side and Hayden on the other. They may not be as liable in the secondary as they have been in years past. Plus the addition of starting TJ Watt at linebacker, maybe allowing him to make some plays, maybe that takes some of that pressure that they can get more of a pass rush that they haven't had over the last couple of years, and maybe that puts them in a better position.
Yeah, we got some comments from listeners out there that Hayden was getting regularly burnt on the Browns, and they think it's a bad pickup. I think a lot of that was due to him being the number one guy. And I'm not sure if the Steelers are even going to use him like that. Picking him up this late, I'm assuming he's going to come in sort of like the nickelback. And I think he's going to be a very welcomed addition to the Steelers secondary and help in some of those cases where you have a guy. We talked about it against the preseason game where Sanu came in there and he was tearing up the Steelers secondary. In the regular season, he's going to be a number two. He's not going to be the number one like he was in the preseason. So you need a nickel guy that has that first cover the best guy experience that can help the Steelers lock down and take out some of these guys. Yeah, he's up in age, but I think at this point in the game, you're not going to have that many pickups available. We got some comments here about someone agrees you don't have to lock down. He's not going to be the one to lock down, say, AJ Green or someone. They can adjust the scheme and use him in spot relief. That's why it would have been nice if they picked up TJ Ward. And I want to get your guys' thoughts on this. There's been some complaints from Ward and some other things that have come out on how the Broncos handled it. They sort of didn't tell him. He thought his position was safe. I don't know about some of his like going to the workouts and stuff. They said he missed some voluntary stuff, which is voluntary. Voluntary is voluntary. He was a Pro Bowl player. Do you think that hurts the Broncos in the future signing free agents? Because this is the kind of thing that came out of the 49ers when Harbaugh left. There was some background animosity about the front office kind of stretching players around. They kind of did it with Kaepernick this past year. Nothing for what he was doing with the whatever, the national anthem stuff that he's doing. Just more along the lines of he wanted to get a contract last year. 49ers front office hasn't played ball with anyone. Over time, I mean, Peyton Manning turned on the 49ers because of their front office and went to Denver. Do you think this has any adverse effects in Denver like it had for other teams in the past? Rick, what do you think?
The one thing it keeps me thinking is Denver hasn't had a quarterback since Peyton Manning went there. And Peyton Manning was, you know, he had a short list when he was a free agent of places he wanted to go. So what makes me think is that if you're making this guy so disgruntled and he's leaving and going to go trash talk you, he's obviously telling his friends. He's now told all the media and everything, so they know. I don't see Denver isn't a place like it was once ago where everybody was going there, your top free agents and everything. They're not going there to play. And the thing is, they are losing guys. Well, and look, they haven't found the successor still to Peyton Manning. They're going to give Brock Osweiler a second shot at it. So go ahead, try your second shot. You blew it in Texas, and Cleveland didn't even want to play you. Congratulations. Cleveland didn't want to play you. So good luck in Denver. Have fun, buddy. But yeah, I could see it. I think it's happening right now.
Matt, what do you think?
I don't think it really affects them. I mean, John Elway's your front office person. I think part of the reason that Manning was able to sign in Denver is because he had Elway there. I don't know that there's a lot of issues with their front office and dealing with it. I think some of this stuff with TJ Ward may just be sour grapes because they let him go after he thought that he had a locked position in place. And now with signing with Tampa, he's going to be in more of a prove it type situation where he's once again having to prove his value as opposed to just being able to sit back and think that he has that paycheck coming. So I think some of that may be disgruntled, just employee leaving a former job. As far as places to go, you know, if you're an offensive player, I think having that kind of supporting cast on the defensive side of the ball with the wide receiver weapons that they have, you would think that Denver would be a place that you would want to go. Or if you're an average running back, they churn out 1,000-yard rushers all the time because of scheme. You know, you would think that that would be a place that you could go get your numbers up and then potentially sign a better deal or a bigger deal with somebody else down the road. So, no, I don't think that it's going to be something that's going to hurt them over the long haul. Now, if it's something that consistently comes out over multiple players over an extended period of time, it may come back to bite them like it did with the Niners. But I think in a one-time player move, I don't think that it's going to hurt them.
Yeah, I guess it depends on the culture. Right now, the Broncos have such a great defense that they might be able to pull in free agents. On offense, it's kind of, are you going to be able to thrive there? Like you said, some of the contract stuff, you need to be in a situation if you're a receiver. Are they going to have a quarterback that's going to give me the ball? Because if I go there, am I going to be in a wasteland? Because if you look at some of the stuff that like Al Davis used to get for the Raiders, he was able to pull moves, pulling in late guys late in their career like Tim Brown, Jerry Rice. People wanted to play for him. They weren't running out and getting away from it. I don't know if I see that from John Elway. I know you kind of see teams that have to clean house after a while. And it makes me think if the Broncos keep going downhill, they're not able to get a quarterback in place. They're not able to sign any of these free agents. Is that a position that John Elway is going to be ousted from? I don't even know if he can be. Is he the owner or is he just the GM? I'm not sure of their exact situation, but I just know that Denver seems to be trending down when they looked pretty dominant a few years ago in the Super Bowl on defense. And normally that doesn't really happen to a defense. If you look at the Steelers through the early 2000s and the Ravens, both had dominant defenses that were able to carry them through pretty much the whole decade. So that's what I see when I look at the Broncos. Their defense has kind of spun off pretty fast. The other comparable defense, the Seahawks, they're still good. And then the other one I mentioned, the 49ers had that dominant of a defense, and the front office kind of pushed everyone away, coach, players, and everyone, and had a mass fallout. That's the kind of vibes I'm getting from Denver right now. And right before the season, if you're having this kind of animosity talk, I don't know. A lot of people expected them to be the number one defense. I guess we'll wait and see when things come. Going back into it, game starts on Thursday. Chiefs and Patriots. I think this is a good kickoff game, and it's going to be a very good litmus test here for the Chiefs. Do you think they have a chance to beat New England in this opener, and do you think it will set the tone for their season? Go ahead, Rick.
You have to go to New England. So the Chiefs have to go to New England to play this game. So I don't see the Chiefs winning this game. I just see they're already missing their top running back already this time of the year. So you could say the same thing. Patriots are missing their best wide receiver. So they're both missing offensive weapons here. The Patriots always have the tendency when it has these big games. They always have the tendency to win the big games. I don't know what it is in the water in New England, but they have it. So I think that this one is still looking like a New England game. They don't lose often at home, and this is definitely a game where they definitely feel they still want to prove it, that they still got a run left in them, and especially since Brady's healthy right now, this is their shot. So I'm going to give this to Patriots. I still think Chiefs have a good defense too, but I think Brady still picks them apart and everything.
Matt, what do you think?
I think Andy Reid will probably take a timeout within the first minute or two of the game, and then he'll probably burn another one before the end of the first quarter. And the Chiefs will end up losing the game because of his terrible game management, just like he has everywhere else he's gone. And I think it'll be a lot closer than people will think, but I just don't think that he'll win because there will be a crucial situation where he needs to manage the game correctly, and he'll do the wrong thing.
I still, every time I see him on the sideline, I think of that meme people made years ago when he was with the Eagles, where they changed his play card that he always holds up to the Waffle House menu. And they're like, Andy Reid placing his order, while the rest of the team's huddled off to the side and he's just standing down there during another mismanagement situation. So that's what I think of when I think of Andy Reid. He'll get you close. And I've mentioned it before on the show. He'll get you close. He'll get you 10 wins, but they're not going to be anything eye-opening. And my main thing that I'm watching in this game is Tom Brady. He's getting old. I mean, you can eat clean, and I know he has his own diet book I text you guys about as a joke, where he's only eating like fresh food and whatever. He has his own personal chef that goes with him. He doesn't eat with the team or whatever, and he thinks that's the key to his longevity. But at some point, it's going to drop off. I only think of one guy when I think of playing in like their 40s and 50s, and that's Julio Franco. And that's playing baseball. And basically he was just a glorified pinch hitter that came in and filled extra games at like 50. He's not a starting quarterback who's out there, or he wasn't a starting catcher, to put it in baseball terms, out there every game, taking hits, doing whatever. So I wouldn't be shocked if he's good this year, but eventually that drop-off's going to happen. I'm honestly kind of surprised he didn't retire after that Super Bowl win, because that was such a miraculous win. I know he wants to play later in his career. I know Giselle's kind of pushing him out she wants him home with the kids, doesn't want him to get any concussions, whatever. I think there was a rumor over the offseason, which, you know, you can't believe that stuff, where they said he did have a concussion maybe last year or 2 years ago, and he played through it, and he was like, there's no record of that, and he like kind of played it off. So I'm waiting to see if there's going to be Tom Brady drop-off this year, and that opens up a whole other slew of quarterbacks. I know we talked about it. Ben Roethlisberger has to stay healthy. Otherwise, you're going to be seeing a couple of these long-stay quarterbacks in the league cycle out of the league here in two or 3 years. You're going to see a whole new crop of quarterbacks, seeing who can carry the league. What do you guys think of Tom Brady, and is he going to have any performance drop-off this year? Go ahead, Rick.
No.
Or whoever. No.
No. Bills, Jets are two reasons why. I mean, that's your first – that's one of your games that I'm probably going to be falling asleep to if they put it on TV is Bills Jets game. I mean, geez. No, I mean, he's not going to have it. The schedule is set up for him. They have a weaker schedule that they're going to play. And, I mean, you got two games against, you know, four games against those teams. I mean, and his offensive line blocks so well for him. He has, it seems like, forever to pick up guys. And that's how, like, Edelman and Amendola and all, you know, always came open because somehow he was still standing upright. Nobody was near him. And he could make the 5-yard dump pass where other quarterbacks would be on the ground. So C.J. Cutler and those guys. Cam Newton, there's another one.
Matt, you said no, too. What do you think?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same reasons. I mean, the system's the same. McDaniels is the offensive coordinator, but it's basically Brady going in saying what he wants to run. So, I mean, there's no push. Favre played till he was 1,000 years old, too. If they have the system in place where he's comfortable with the reads and he's not taking the unnecessary hits, I mean, New England's invested in the offensive line and keeping him protected, keeping the weapons in place, that a lot of his throws are more rhythm-based, not stand back air and take repeated shot after shot. There's no reason he couldn't play for, you know, another 4 or 5 years if he wanted to.
Well, you brought up Brett Favre. He kind of went crazy there at the end, jumping back and forth teams, sending dick pics, harassing trainers. I mean, is that the end you see for Tom Brady? Because I think last year he got a little bit of help taking that 5-game break, or was it 4-game? I think that was last year. I get my football years mixed up, but he gets that and he gets to heal and just kind of hang out for a few weeks, has some backups. I did see they traded Brissett. I can't remember, to the Colts. Was it the Colts? I could be wrong. But I think that could be a hurting point if something does happen to Tom Brady. They are putting all their eggs in Garoppolo, which I brought up earlier. It's good to have two quality backups because Garoppolo hasn't been able to stay healthy. So now you're really risking the legacy to get rid of your backup that was able to lead you to some wins. You go ahead and give them to, I'm pretty sure it's another AFC team if it's not the Colts. But I don't know. That was the main storylines I had for this week one. Checking in on Tom Brady, hoping the Steelers have some semblance of defense. The Browns, they're young, they're hungry, they're athletic. Anything else you guys have for people to watch for in week one as we end down the show here? Matt, anything to watch for?
Just I'm curious to see who is going to separate themselves in the running backs. There's so many teams that are going with the dual running back systems, you know, like Tennessee, like Cleveland, that who's going to be the guy that's going to emerge as your primary ball carrier for a lot of these ball clubs. So many people are going with this multi-back approach, and I'm curious to see who's going to kind of separate themselves and see which running backs are going to emerge as the primary ball carriers and who are going to be your guys that are going to end up not really getting the touches.
Well, I'll go with that. Even some of the other ones, I saw Chris Johnson got cut by the Cardinals. He was a great pickup a few years ago. He might be done on the downhill, but that's someone, like you said, if you can't find a lead running back or if someone gets hurt, are there even any that are going to be available? I don't know. The game's kind of evolved away from that. You have to be able to catch, and I know a lot of guys coming out of the college cannot catch. That's why it's going to be interesting to watch Christian McCaffrey because he can, and he looked pretty good in preseason. I know people down here in Carolina are pumped to see him play because finally they'll have a dual threat running back, someone who can run between the tackles and someone who can get out there, make catches, take a little bit of pressure off Cam Newton, and get the ball in space. Anything, Rick, do you have to watch for in this first week?
A lot of rivalry games. Giants go to Cowboys. Eagles go to Redskins already. Seattle goes to Green Bay. So a lot of rivalry games off the bat. And two of your teams that I think they're going to do good this year, Falcons and Panthers, got easy games to start off with, even though they're on the road. Falcons get to go to Bears, and Panthers get to go to 49ers. So those two teams get to start off with, like, week five of the preseason continued. So, and the Monday night games, thanks for putting these two games on Monday night. We got Saints versus Minnesota, which Minnesota's playing at home, so that should be an easy win.
That's a Peterson matchup. They did that because of Adrian Peterson.
Oh, that's a good point. And then Chargers, another rivalry game, get to go to Denver. So, but that game should be dominated by Denver. They're playing in Denver. So a lot of rivalry games, but a lot of games are going to be lopsided too off the first week.
Speaking with that, I think they did this because I did notice what you're saying, a bunch of rivalry games and a lot of big games. I think they're trying to get back the fans with the ratings. And I sent some numbers out today. I'll be tweeting some stuff out. College football had its best opening weekend in years, and they're saying it could be ever. The Michigan-Florida game was the highest non-primetime game they've ever had for an opening weekend. And the Florida State-Bama game, I think both of those games beat every game from the past 3 years in the first couple weeks of college football. The only regular season game that usually matches that, I think last year, was Ohio State-Michigan had over a 10 rating. I think the Florida State-Alabama game this week had a 7 and something. And then the Michigan-Florida had a 5. Everything else was 4 or under. The ones, even the big matchups we mentioned earlier in the show, LSU and stuff, had 5s. So we might have had a little bit of a disconnect. So if you're watching at home, the internet might have went out here due to the storm. And we might have lost a live stream. So we'll end it with that. And thanks for watching. I'll circle back with the guys. Sorry for the hurt connection. I don't know if there's anything I'm going to be able to do. I just lost out on everything. Be sure to follow us. We also have a number. So if you listen to home, give us a rating. Sorry, that was out of my control. I knew there was a chance that it was going to happen with the weather. And everything kind of just crashed here at the end. So we made it pretty much through the whole episode. And it disconnected me. But we'll go ahead and the stream, and the live show. If you're a fan, tell your friends, get the word out there, help us spread out. If you have some hot takes, we're looking to play some hot takes on the show. I've been trying to get some extra episodes up, but you can give us a voicemail. Leave us a voicemail. We may play it on the show. If you tell us that you don't want it to play, I'm not going to play it. But just know, because we had some people call, but no one left the voicemail, because I think we have like the legal read that if you leave a voicemail, it may be used on the show. But if you leave a note like, hey, you can talk about this on the show, but don't use my voice or whatever, I'll respect that. So the number for the people at home, because we have the number up on the live show, I never show it. For some reason, it just always, I mean, I never say it, it's always up there. But our voicemail number is 1, which is the United States code. So if you're outside the United States, you need to dial 1. The area code, 412-330-1512. Again, that's 412-330-1512. Football season's here. Leave us some hot takes. Follow us on Twitter. Get into arguments with us. We'll make sure to get back to you. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.